My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Thursday, June 10th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show. The
landlord doesn't have to give you any notice. They can just kick you out. They can raise the rent by whatever they want. You are a guest, essentially. And if they decide at some point that you're trespassing, that can turn into a really tricky situation very quickly.
As Victoria rental prices continue to push people out of the city, creative solutions to housing are on the rise. We speak to someone about their idea to camp in a backyard and look at the impact these kinds of solutions have on housing and quality of life in British Columbia's capital. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Residences, now under construction in the heart of Victoria's coveted Old Town. Find out more at thepearlresidences.ca. The Facebook group Victoria Rentals is where many folks go to find housing options in the city and surrounding areas. The posts found on the page range from people looking for roommates, offering rooms, to looking for units. But one recent post sparked a conversation about the common frustration with prices in the city. Guillermo Coleman posted looking for a backyard to pitch his tent instead of paying the market prices. In the post, he said he has a full-time job, but given that he would spend most of his time at work instead of in an apartment, he said he would rather save his money toward his next trip than pay the market prices in Victoria. The post received nearly 130 comments before being removed from the page. Guillermo said he believes that is because of bylaws that prohibit what he's looking for. The comments overwhelmingly supported the idea. The top comment read, "Great way to take a stand. I can't count how many rentals I have turned down due to the ridiculous cost and low quality." And another person offered their couch up because they also agreed that rent prices are too unaffordable. This is just one creative solution to housing, albeit decently extreme. It is far from abnormal in a province where van life and car camping is increasingly popular. But not everyone is willing to get creative. Some people just leave. In February, Capital Daily published a story where we spoke to UVic students who say rental prices are driving them away from the city. As students graduate, they are moving away to find more affordable housing. In Victoria's 2020 Vital Signs report, 82% of survey respondents disagreed that young adults have access to affordable housing. Moving away is something that has become even more common because of the pandemic. With students learning online and not needing to be physically present, they have taken to leaving the city, driving the vacancy rate in Victoria up to 2.5% last summer, the highest it has been since 2013. And the rates closer to UVic and Camosun were particularly high at 3.3%. But even with rising vacancy rates during the pandemic, rental rates in the city have still gone up. In a report from the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, it was found that rental prices in the region increased 3.3% from 2019 to 2020 for an average cost of $1,185 per month for a one-bedroom. According to the report, which came out in late January, the rates rose faster than inflation and the provincially allowable rent increase. Again, this is despite a pandemic, and increases prior to the pandemic were even more steep. And according to monthly data from rentals.ca, the going rental price for a one-bedroom rental for May averaged at $1,640 per month. This is up month over month, as is all of British Columbia, despite average prices in Canada as a whole decreasing. On this episode, we'll speak to Emily Rogers from Together Against Poverty Society about the prices and trends in the city and how creative and drastic solutions are impacting the quality of life in the city. But before we get to that, we speak to Guillermo Coleman, the renter who posted his creative solution of tenting in someone's backyard. Guillermo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
I first want to ask, is the post serious?
Initially, it was done as a bit of a joke.
Okay.
But then, you know, I sat down and I started calculating how much time I was going to be spending during the day, during the week. And I just couldn't I couldn't justify spending average rent prices because I just wasn't going to be home all day. You know, I have a full time that when I get there, I'm going to be doing, and then I already have some of my weekends planned, and then I have I like to rock climb, so you know I'm going to be out most of the day. So, I'm trying to get creative in terms of what I can do.
Were you at first looking at rentals, and then that's when you decided, no, this is too much for me?
Yeah. I mean, and it's a bit of a chaotic market.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like houses go very quickly.
Can I ask where you're coming from?
Sure, I'm coming from Ontario.
Ontario? So like central Ontario?
I live in Hamilton currently.
Hamilton, okay, so that's quite expensive as well.
Mm-hmm.
But more affordable than Victoria, seemingly?
It's about the same, really. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the reasons I chose to go to Victoria is because it's BC, there's mountains there. You know, I used to live in Squamish.
Okay.
I used to live out of my car for a bit, and I'm a rock climber, so I, you know, there's a lot of folks that do that there, and a lot of folks that live out of their vans, and we get along great, and Squamish is definitely a place to go if you're going to be, you know, camping out a lot. Mm-hmm. But it just so happens that I found this job in Victoria, and there aren't that many campsites in Victoria, at least not in the immediate mm-hmm. vicinity. Like, probably, like, it's interesting because, like, an hour away, there's a bunch of free spots. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Can I ask what job you got? Like, what kind of job you're going to be working at?
Sure. So, I actually have a little bit of, two jobs, you could say. So, I'm currently writing as much as I can. I'm working on my first book. I wouldn't say I'm an author yet. Maybe the entitlement for that title is...
If you're writing, you're a writer. I think that's how it works. So you're a writer.
So I spent quite a bit of time writing.
Mm-hmm.
And as kind of to offset the amount of time that I spent kind of sitting, I am just opting for a more physical type job, right? So this is a bit of a labor mm-hmm. job. So it's not like, definitely not like what I used to do. I used to be an engineer, software engineer. So okay. I was making... you know, a lot of money, and I could easily afford rent. But in kind of choosing to go down this more artistic path, you know, I'm slowly going towards the starving artist life. yeah, just finding ways to, you know.
If the work that you did get wasn't in Victoria, would you even consider living here given the rent prices?
If the work wasn't in Victoria, I would still consider living there.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
But would you do the same kind of rental situation?
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm not a stranger to it.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Squamish, we'd camp out for months at a time in our mm-hmm. tents, sometimes in the car, sometimes in. So, yeah, I would.
So this is kind of... I feel like a lot of people, young people specifically, are kind of hitting this point where the prices that you pay and the money that you're making doesn't make the lifestyle attractive to do the classic, have your full-time job, live in the city, pay the full-time rent, or, you know, whatnot. Is that something that you kind of like, at one point you realized the quality of life for, you know, that style of life versus just kind of roughing it and doing what I want instead of participating in all that? Was that what kind of turned you on to this lifestyle, and do you see that among other people?
For sure. When I was an engineer, I actually burnt myself out from overworking. Mm-hmm. And I was living in downtown Toronto, and you know, I started to realize, you know, why am I... It's kind of the same issue, is that I was hardly ever home, and I was mm-hmm. working to pay this rent, and so I thought, you know, why am I paying for something that I'm not even spending the majority of my time in, you know? If I don't, like, live in it, and if I'm not paying it, then I don't have to work as much, was the initial mm-hmm. sort of mentality. And actually, I've tried different lifestyles in the past 2 or 3 years. Like, last year I was working at a farm. And the exchange was for me to live for free in exchange for some work over there. And that was great. You know, that was that was ideal. It was calm, it was quiet. I was physically moving a lot. I really enjoyed that. And yeah, no, just coming. So right now I'm in a house and I spend a lot of time sitting down, and it seems like my body just doesn't enjoy that type of thing. I feel myself kind of, maybe it's just the act of writing for long hours is kind of, you know, uncomfortable. So I'm really just trying to set up a lifestyle for myself where I can be a little bit more active. You know, if if I can commute, if I can get, you know, 30 minute bike ride commute is, you know, beneficial for me because of the exercise, and it's then, you know, I'm trying to aim for that, right? And I'm trying to be strategic as well. Like, so I'm open for campsites, for example, that are an hour away, because I could use the, like, the bus if I'm going to be busing it, for example. That's a good chunk of time that I could spend writing.
I think a lot of people who are listening to this, there's probably like two groups of people. One who are saying, wow, this sounds amazing. I totally want to do this. I wish I could do that, or I'm going to do that. And two, other people saying, wow, that's not sustainable. What about your savings? What about your future? What about when you can't live that kind of lifestyle physically anymore? What would you say to the people who are thinking about maybe, you know, again, like that's not sustainable?
You know, my brother actually grills me on this a lot. He's like, you should invest in a house. House prices just keep going up and up and up. You can just sell it eventually. You'll make money like that, you know? And, you know, I do agree in some ways. You know, it's an interesting mentality to have. Like, for sure, if you have the skills to... actually, just thinking about it, probably the best thing you can do is make a house if you have the skills and you can get accreditation for it. Because there's, you know, you can just sell it for a ridiculous price. But anyway, on the sustainability part, I mean, it really depends on what you value. If you're someone that wants to, for example, start a family, you know, you really can't avoid getting a house, you know, keeping your children safe and, you know, having a nice place for you and your spouse to live in. But if you're someone free, and by free, I mean, like, you don't have responsibilities like a kid, or even having a partner is a bit of responsibility because you have to kind of decide how you guys are going to live, cohabitate together. Yeah, I guess it just depends on what you value, right? If you're someone that enjoys freedom, then, you know, more power to you, because maybe it's just me personally, but I find that the less things I have, the less kind of baggage I seem to carry around. So one of the reasons I actually opted for this option is because I gave away my car to my mom. And because maybe I was just getting tired of the van life, so to speak. I was like playing Tetris in my car a lot, you know, moving my things around. And I really like enjoyed that time spent. But when I got rid of my car, it was such a liberating feeling for me. You know, there was so much less stress to worry about. And I used to do my own like repairs, but even then it was still kind of like expensive, right? So yeah, I guess it just depends on, I guess, what you identify with your values and what you identify with yourself. Like if you like having a car, you know, then there's a bit of extra, more things to think about is the way I like to kind of put it in my head. Like, you know, when owning a car, you got to think about all these things, the repairs, the insurance, blah, 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 blah. Then owning a house, you got to think about more things, blah, 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 blah. And to me, that's mental, more baggage. Mental things you have to juggle.
Yeah.
I really value having a space to think. Because again, I'm a bit of a writer, you know, I'm a traveling writer, I guess you could say now. So I like to just think about what is important to me.
If the market was more affordable, would you at all consider, while you're in Victoria working this job, living in an apartment?
For sure. I mean, the winter is going to come.
Yeah. Yes.
Just because I'm doing this now doesn't mean circumstances won't change later. I'm not going to be... Probably I'll get something by the time the snow comes, right?
Well, I mean, you don't get much snow here, so it could be a while. All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, though.
Oh, thanks. It's been fun.
Before our next conversation, a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Residences, now under construction in the heart of Victoria's coveted Old Town. The Pearl Residences highlight the best the city has to offer. A brand new release of junior one-bedroom homes are starting at $370,000, in addition to one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and two-bedroom and den options still available. Discover more at thepearlresidences.ca. And now we speak to Emily Rogers from Together Against Poverty Society. Emily, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. You have been working with renters for years. We just spoke to somebody who had the creative solution of camping in somebody's backyard to save on rent money. What are some of the creative solutions that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all over the place. And I kind of wonder a little bit about the framing of creative solution. It is absolutely creative. I don't know that it's a solution. It's a creative way to meet your needs in a really unjust situation. So, for example, like right now, we're working with a couple of women. They're in their 60s and they're sharing a 400 square foot bachelor unit.
Oh, wow.
So, like, is that creative? Yes, they're making it work. I'm sure there's lots of creativity that goes into sharing that kind of space so intimately with someone. And they're just, they're friends. They're not, they didn't plan on living together. It has come about because of the inaccessibility of the housing market that they've chosen to do this. I don't think it would be their first choice by any stretch of the imagination. So yes, there's lots of ingenuity in that. I also, just wish that that wasn't the case, you know?
Yeah. What are some of the potential drawbacks when these solutions become more prevalent?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. So, for instance, when we're talking about like sharing space, food security can be a thing if there's insufficient fridge space to keep larger quantities of food or freezers space. If you're, I mean, especially if you're living in a tent, food insecurity can be a real big problem. Also, something that I think people don't often think about is that you might not have tenancy rights in some of these sort of creative solutions, because if you share a bathroom or kitchen with your landlord, you're not considered to have a tenancy under the Residential Tenancy Act. So what that means is, according to the law, you don't have the protections that the act provides. The landlord doesn't have to give you any notice. They can just kick you out. They can raise the rent by whatever they want. You are a guest, essentially. And if they decide at some point that you're trespassing, that can turn into a really tricky situation very quickly.
So these solutions aren't exactly viable long term then?
I don't think so. No, absolutely not. Which is why I keep speaking towards and looking towards more systemic solutions that address some of the root causes and change the system a little so that people aren't forced to rearrange their lives so drastically in order to meet a basic need, which is housing.
There's also some quote-unquote creative solutions from developers. I was actually just reading about a proposal that would serve as communal living where prices would be about 30% below market, but tenants would share bathrooms and kitchens. What do you think of these kinds of solutions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a place on the housing spectrum for that kind of thing. Where I don't think it's new. SROs, which are single residency occupancy, or I think I have that right, but something along those lines. SROs, anyway, have been part of the housing spectrum for a really long time. And traditionally, they've been more accessible for people with lower incomes. In Vancouver, especially, we're seeing those SROs be gentrified quite quickly. It's happening in Victoria, too. So I think, yeah, there's a place for these kinds of solutions, for sure, on the housing spectrum. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all, absolutely. Obviously, that wouldn't work well for someone that has a family, or it just wouldn't work well for a lot of folks for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, I mean, great. I think if we can have a spectrum of housing available, then that's awesome.
How have you seen the rental market in Victoria change?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's been wild, truly. It's been wild in like not a good way. I started as a tenant advocate about 5 years ago. And I think when I started, it was really just beginning to take off. And I didn't really even realize it as a new advocate how quickly things were changing. But, you know, when we look back 6 years or so, we can see in the data that things have changed really drastically in terms of how the housing market has functioned and how it's doing. And one of the sort of stats that I really like to point to demonstrate this is the gap between the rent for vacant units and occupied units. So, you know, mm-hmm. when you see like average rent, that figure takes into account all units in the region or in Victoria.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So what I'm interested in sort of talking about more is how much it would cost to get housing in now. So then we're just looking at vacant units and it's about 20% more. So I don't know if I'm explaining this like as simply as I could, but essentially 6 years ago, the difference between an occupied unit and a vacant unit was $39. So basically you could move and find something around the same price. Now the average difference is $356. So that's a really big gap between the average for what people are currently living in and the average of what's on the market. And I think this is important to talk about because it causes three main problems that I can see. First of all, obviously, the average, like the price that you need to get into the housing market or the income that you need to get in the housing market is way higher now. So that's a problem just for accessibility. Secondly, it means that landlords are, they have a huge incentive to kick out people that have been there for a long time because they can make so much more if they just re-rent it. Flipping the unit automatically gets them $350 more without having to do a single thing. That means that housing insecurity is so much more, it's so much more prevalent because landlords have that financial incentive right in front of them. And that creates like a really large power differential between the landlord and the tenant, in which the tenant is much more likely to accept substandard living conditions or harassment and abuse because they know that they can't afford to go anywhere else. And the landlord also knows that. So the power differential is just so much more magnified and I think leads to a lot of the tenancy issues that we see today.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that, like the moving penalty, right? Even when you're moving laterally, you end up paying more. We do have a unique situation right now where the province's repayment plans for rent that wasn't paid during the early pandemic that ends in July. Are you expecting to see this become a much bigger issue come summertime?
Yeah, I expect that it will continue to get worse and worse unless vacancy control is brought in. Honestly, that is the one thing that I can see that'll just stop the bleeding. Like, will it make things more affordable overall? No, probably not. But it will address some of the problems and especially it will take away the financial incentive for landlords to kick out people. And that's the main thing that I'm really interested in stopping.
Can you explain first how the vacancy rates affect price and then what can be done to control vacancy?
Yeah. Okay. So vacancy control as a concept means that the rent can't go up when the unit is vacant. So the landlord can increase the rent by the allowable rent increase every year, but they can't do these massive price increases when the tenancy turns over. So right okay. now what we're seeing is that yes, the rent is controlled during the same tenancy, but if that tenant moves out for whatever reason or if a landlord is successful at evicting that person, they can repost it at market rate, which can be, you know, whatever, $500 more, $300 more. And that's really contributing to the proliferation of inaccessibility and unaffordability amongst the rental market. Vacancy rates are important to consider because that element of choice is important so that tenants aren't stuck in undesirable situations and can find something if necessary. Or, you know, there's lots of reasons why someone could want to move and they don't have that option if the vacancy rate is low, which means that prices increase and we see creative solutions like tent cities. And I know that there's been lots of conversation around tent cities in our community and lots of people think that that's not the best way to meet housing needs. I would agree. And I think it is a creative solution, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So just to get it straight. So if a landlord was renting a unit at, say, you know, $1,300,
yeah.
then they evicted or successfully evicted the tenant. They could not, under a vacancy control, they could not post it for that, like, you know, $300 additional dollars. they would have to do the same price that they were renting it for?
Uh-huh, exactly. And BC actually had this policy from 1974 to 1983. It was an NDP policy, and we had it. Currently, Quebec has it, PEI has it, certain sort of parts of Ontario have it to a lesser degree. So it's not a completely radical idea.
Yeah.
I know that sometimes, I know that like some developers are really concerned about that idea. They say that it will increase or it will affect the viability of development in BC. But when we actually look at the data, there was no correlation between private investment in rental housing and vacancy control in that 1974 to 1983 period. When we look at that period compared to after vacancy control was repealed, there's no significant correlation between that policy and investment in rental housing.
Do you know a lot about people who are working full-time jobs and are
Yeah, 100%. I think you can just walk down really any street or sit at any dinner table and have that conversation. Yeah, I was just looking today at data on how many hours someone would need to work at minimum wage in order to afford a one-bedroom or two-bedroom in Victoria. And we're looking at about 84 hours for one-bedroom a week and 112 hours a week for a two-bedroom.
112, wow.
Yeah, so like triple a normal work week. So, I mean, that's going to tell you a lot right there.
And we have one of the highest minimum wages. I mean, we do have now the official highest minimum wage across the country, too.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, that, yeah, it says a lot. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sort of lost for words because it's just so stark how and so obvious to me why that's a problem. Yeah, lots of people are working their butts off and still aren't able to make ends meet. And honestly, too, it shouldn't really matter what your employment status is. Like, housing is a human right. So I totally understand why that's part of the conversation. And I just want to bring it back to like the fundamental fact for me that housing is a human right.
What are some of the solutions that you think could mitigate the problem?
There's a bunch of things that we can do. So absolutely, we need more supply. We need the right type of supply, though, because right now, the type of supply that we're getting is out of reach. It's unhelpful in a lot of ways because it's just too expensive. I was really interested to read that the West Shore has the highest average rent of everywhere in the region because of all the new units that they have out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of surprising because, you know, I hear a lot about supply and demand. And even with all those new units out there, they're all coming online at like $1,500 for a one bedroom, $1,600 for a one bedroom. So they actually have the highest rent in the region. So it's the type of supply. We need public housing. We need social housing. We need co-op housing. We need a spectrum of housing, like you suggested, sort of with that SRO concept. I think that has a place too. And we need housing for families. We need two and three bedrooms that are affordable and accessible for families, especially single parent families.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that we need a diversity of tactics to sort of get at this problem. I think all levels of government have a role to play. And I mean, fundamentally, I think we just need to shift the conversation away from housing as a commodity to housing as a human right. The conversation around housing is so tied up in capitalist economics. And I think that has a role that definitely has a place in the conversation, but we also need just to get back to like fundamental human dignity.
Mm-hmm. As vacancy rates went up during the pandemic, and I mean, we expected to see rent decline. It did not. It is still inclined. And we're almost in that post-pandemic time now. Are we going to see any impact on the rental market, like, you know, skyrocketing? Is that expected?
I'm not sure. I'm not a forecaster when it comes to housing, so it's difficult for me to speculate. I think it's very reasonable to assume that that might be an outcome. I would not be surprised at all if that's what we see. Something that I noticed during the pandemic, which I haven't really figured out where this falls in the whole ecosystem, but I noticed that a lot of rental buildings are offering incentives for people to sign on. So like free cable, free rent for like a few months, sort of thing. But the contract that someone's locked into is still at a very high rate. It's interesting that the monthly rate articulated in the contract is still staying very high, but there's these other incentives that are coming to try to sweeten the deal, which I think is happening instead of the prices going down.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your work on all this. It's going to continue to be a huge issue across the province, no doubt. And thank you for clearing some of this information up.
You're so welcome.
To read more about housing in Victoria, you can visit the housing section at capitaldaily.ca, and there you will find the articles that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. And if you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks again for joining us. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review and subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamports. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.